All right. Throw those on, big doll. Let's make sure you can hear me all right, because some guys can, some guys can't. Sound all right? We good?
All right. That's perfect.
Beautiful. Let's bring us back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. The final hour of day three of SEC Media Days. The Rob Brown Show is here on the Fan Upstate, presented by our friends at Ingles, and we are very glad to have them on board as phenomenal sponsors and friends. We're all friends here. Very excited to welcome to the show a young man that I have been listening to for 2 days now from 30 yards away, and I'm sure that in the last couple of mornings he's been listening to me from 30 yards away. Two dudes that are the first two. I get to claim this, Elijah Campbell from 107.5, the game in Columbia, South Carolina. I like to claim this just because it's got that ring to it. First guys in, last guys out. That's us.
Oh, we get to live it this week.
Like, it's great.
That's not just a cliche. We are living. That is a fact in this building. We are here before the sun comes up. We are here until it is time to leave. And there's something about that that makes it feel a little more rewarding. You know what? I enjoy getting to hear your show from my table as well, because I know that we are like one of the first two guys in this building when it's absolutely a ghost town, and it does kind of feel a little eerie. It's like being in school when you're a kid on a Saturday and the lights are off and nobody's there. But it's still, it's a pretty good feeling. I prefer this.
I need to jump in real quick. I just have to say, that's an amazing shirt.
And
Rob will go out and buy like three of those later today.
If I had found that shirt, we might have been matching today, because it is elite. It is elite.
Oh, hey, life's a beach, man, if you bring the sand.
Dig it. That's my guy. Elijah Campbell from 107.5 The Game in Columbia, South Carolina. Let's flash back to Monday. Shane Beamer, Lenora Sellers, DQ Smith, Nick Barrett all in here. One of the things that I've pointed out on the show a couple of times is – obviously, despite everything Lenoris did on the field last year, a lot of folks are still asking questions. Is he that guy? Whatever. I've got a betting slip out on this guy to be a Heisman Trophy finalist this year, okay? And I feel good about
it. Yeah, I would.
This young man was walking around this building on Monday looking like an absolute rock star. Gaggle of reporters, yes. ESPN cameras all over him the whole time. And on top of that, for whatever it's worth, I thought he was answering questions exceptionally well, sounded good to go. In fact, he got asked on the network, how do you feel about the Heisman hype? How do you feel about the folks in Columbia calling you the Heisman? And a lot of quarterbacks, I think, would give you the cliches. Oh, it's personal award, not worry. He was like, I think it's great. I'm leaning into it. I hope we can get it done. Like, he feels like a dude that took the back half of the year, the Clemson win. It feels to me like there is an unbridled confidence in Lenora Sellers, which for a guy that has as much pressure and hype on him as he does, that's invaluable.
Oh, it absolutely is. And really, his attitude here in Atlanta at Media Days is a reflection as to what his confidence is like in terms of how it's changed, right? Let's go back a little bit to week one of last year. Old Dominion comes to Williams-Brice, and it's a disaster. The game itself is a disaster. Really, the offense scored touchdowns because the defense forced turnovers deep inside Old Dominion's territory. The offense stalled out. I want to say the number was 114 of passing yards Lenoris threw in that game. The completion percentage wasn't very good, and it took a Jalen Kilgore interception to keep Old Dominion from crossing the South Carolina side of the 50 to seal the deal and win that game. That game feels like 50 years ago because of how Lenoris and the team changed. But after that game, in the press conference, he admitted to being really nervous. The press conference that Monday, he admitted to being really nervous. There were a lot of nerves there. There may be some seeds of self-doubt, right? Which is completely normal when you're a first-time starter playing for a school that you were growing up right down the road from, and you have all these family and friends, and now you are in that spotlight that you didn't have to have the previous year that you were there at South Carolina. But then you saw, after he had his moment in the first half of the LSU game, we had that 75-yard touchdown run. He got hurt, missed some time. The Ole Miss game, when he came back, maybe he came back a little early, is kind of the feeling that I've been getting, is that he came back a little early to try to play in that game and pushed it a little bit. But then you saw, even in a loss against Alabama, he was making some crazy throws. He was making plays when the pocket was breaking down, and they lost contain on Alabama's defense. And I think he finally probably saw that as proof of concept that I can do this at the highest level. If I can make plays at Alabama, I can make plays against anyone in this league. And then you saw the 6-game winning streak where he was otherworldly for like in doing it different ways, whether it being throwing for 300 plus yards against Missouri and engineering a comeback in the last couple minutes to win that game, and then what we saw in the Clemson game to wrap up the regular season, I think that has allowed him to feel more confident that he is this type of football player because he's now seen himself do it on the football field.
Without a doubt. So let me ask you this. I'm not going to ask you, are you buying into the Heisman hype? Because I think with the teams we cover, like, we're all going to say yeah. And right. For the record, I do. Again, bet slip out on it. Instead, let me ask you, do you believe that that confidence translates to what the Gamecocks need him to be? I've said a couple of times on the show, and you're welcome to disagree with this mm-hmm. too, as go Lenoris, go the Gamecocks this year. If this kid is a Heisman finalist playing at that level, I think 10-2 is on the table. I think maybe certainly. A backdoor to the SEC title game is on the table. Mm-hmm. If Lenoris Sellers ain't it, if last year was an anomaly and not what he really is, this could be a 6-6 team, and South Carolina fans are left scratching their heads at the end of the year going, what the hell just happened? And the truth could be anywhere in the middle. Yeah. Do you believe that he is the guy that can put them on the successful end of that spectrum?
Absolutely. And it's I agree with you. Like, you know, the teams we cover, we just see these players more. And sometimes we can lose perspective of how good other guys are nationally. That's one thing I tell, you know, our audience is like, look, Cade Klubnik is legit too. That's another guy. Like, he's legitimately a top 5-6 pick in the NFL draft. And scouts love him as much as they do Lenoris. And but when it comes to Lenoris too, I think that the hype is certainly real because of what NFL guys say about him. It's sure. One thing for me to be like, this kid's special. It's one thing for me to see him and say he can single-handedly win you games on the offensive side of the ball. But when Todd McShay is pulling out, you know, comparisons saying he's got, you know, Josh Allen type traits, Lamar Jackson type traits, that's when it really clicks with me. Like, okay, it's not just me saying this because I see him, you know, in games. And we get to see him practice a little bit whenever there's media availability and that we're just around him more. It can be easy for me to fall into that trap, but when other people are kind of confirming that have no skin in the game and that their whole business is not just evaluating NFL talent, but getting it from GMs. Like, they get a lot of those evaluations from GMs. So whenever that happens, it confirms it a little bit. My thing with Lenoris is he can still be Heisman-level good, and the team still goes 7-5 just because of all they have to replace on defense. But I will say, defensively, the defensive line is able to stop the run, and the Carolina defense can somewhat mimic what they were last year, despite having to replace so many dudes that went on to the NFL and heard their name called at the draft. And they keep him from having to score 40 points each game to win and having a Jaden Daniels-like situation at LSU. They can go 10-2. And I think he's the type of player that makes that difference for a school like South Carolina that doesn't normally get those dudes at quarterback.
So you mentioned the defense there, and that's where I kind of wanted to segue next. Elijah Campbell from 107.5, the game in Columbia here on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. You lose guys like Nick Emenwori. Mm-hmm. We're talking first-round draft picks. And on one hand, it's very beneficial for South Carolina to have that happen because now Shane Beamer on a recruiting trail can look at defensive guys and go, I'm sending boys to the league. You're next in line. But obviously, on the gridiron in – what, we're looking at 40-some-odd days until that August 31st matchup with Virginia Tech, you got dogs that you've got to replace. And what I noticed when we talked with Nick Barrett and DQ Smith earlier this week was, even though your top talent went, what has been left behind is a very experienced group, a lot mm-hmm. of four-year guys, a lot of third-year guys, a lot of guys that have been through the meat grinder of some not-so-successful seasons early under Shane Beamer and then the successful season that you went through last year. Talk to me a little bit about what the expectations are, because I've said a couple of times, if South Carolina's defense is holding teams to 24-27, but they're scoring 35-42, we don't say they went 12-0 and won the Natty with only a +5 scoring differential.
Right.
Well, like, that's not hanging on the banners in uh-huh. championship teams. So do you think that this defense this year, with the experience that they have coming back, even if they have lost some of the biggest playmakers out there, is capable of, and I phrase it this way intentionally, doing enough?
Mm-hmm. Doing enough is going to be the term this year. I think in the secondary part, they're set. I mean, the secondary is going to be the strength of that defense, because if you look at what they have coming back, Jalen Kilgore is another guy,
mm-hmm.
depending on the mock draft you subscribe to from whatever prognosticator is your favorite, you may or may not see Jalen Kilgore's name in the back end of the first round. He's the guy that was tied for the SEC lead in interceptions, and a couple of those interceptions saved their hide in games. I mentioned that Old Dominion game to start the season. His interception sealed the deal against Missouri. His interception against Illinois kept them in that game. I mean, he was one of the more opportunistic defensive backs in college football, and he's got all the tools that you need. Judge Collier at corner, I thought, grew immensely over the course of the season. He went from getting targeted 10 times against Old Dominion to only having two more games where he's targeted more than five. Or targeted five, right at five, no more than five, because he got a lot better in terms of how he was at the cornerback position. And then they added Brandon Cisse in the transfer portal from NC State, a guy that Clemson fans would be, you know, familiar with as well. That guy is a proven dude at corner. I think they're set in the secondary. The secondary, I think, can be opportunistic enough to force a lot of turnovers, another strength from last year's defense. But the defensive line, you are banking on hitting on the guys you brought in. Gabriel Brown-Lodindy, I think, is probably the most important player on the Gamecock defense, because coming out of high school, he was one of those top 15 recruits in the country of a heralded Texas A&M recruiting class, just never panned out. But you need him to be that ultimate run stopper. T.J. Sanders and Tonka Hemingway meant a ton to that defense because teams just couldn't run the ball on South Carolina. The only team that really did so successfully in the regular season was Missouri. And that was how Missouri really got in that game, because they were able to gash them on the ground a little bit. But that was more of an exception than the reality. So when I look at this defense, it's if can you stop the run and can you hold teams to 3.5 yards per carry or less? And if they can do that, we're looking at a top 25 defensive unit. And if that's the case, that's the best case scenario for South Carolina. Now, if teams are able to run up the middle on you and manage the clock and keep Lenora Sellers off of the field, then we're starting to get into you're playing a lot of one-score games and you're going to need a little bit of one-score game luck to help carry you throughout the season. But guys like Gabriel Brown-Lodindy, Monkel Goodwine, Sean Murphy at linebacker to replace Demetrius Knight and Debo Williams, also important players that just haven't proven it for a full season. So you like the talent that's there for those two guys specifically, but you've never seen them do it at this level for 12 full games. That's going to be the thing that I'm looking forward to seeing, if the defense can be good enough to support what they have on the offensive side of the ball.
I think that's more than fair. Let's go back to offense for just a minute, and then I want to transition it over to Shane and kind of what is fair for the expectations. Beamer was here a couple of days ago, said that he is relatively confident that we will have a resolution to the racial face-on situation, hopefully going to figure out, hopefully get the waiver, but learn if he's not going to. What is the best? I mean, getting the waiver is the best case scenario. Being able to plug him in as RB1 is the best case scenario. But what does this offense look like if he gets the waiver and is clear to play? And more importantly, if he does not, what's the run game look like for the Gamecocks this year? Because the best way to open up the field for Lenore Sellers is to have a threat to helm run hit from the backfield every time. So you can't play loose with him. What does the run game look like this year with and without Faison in the backfield?
With Faison in the backfield, you'll see a lot more of an efficient offense, kind of with what Rocket Sanders brought. I think one of the best friends Lenoris could have had in that backfield was Rocket Sanders, a guy who can rush for 1,000 yards. And you would feel good about the backfield because Rasul Faison, even at the Mountain West level, which is still really good football, was a 1,000-yard rusher last year, an 1,100-yard rusher last year. He was a weapon for Utah State. And that opens up your offense completely. It takes more pressure off of Lenore Sellers to be Superman, right? You don't have to be 2010 Cam Newton if you have a running game that you can rely upon or a running back that you can give the ball 20 times to. And that's why it's so significant, because I like Oscar Attaway as a runner. I like Isaiah Augustov, who they took out of Colorado in the transfer portal, as a runner, because they're both hard-nosed, good change-of-pace backs. But Oscar Attaway specifically, in the 4 years that he's played college football, has never led his team in carries. He's never been asked to carry the ball 20 times in a game, or even 15 times per game in a consistent basis. Same thing with Augustov. Even though he's the leading rusher for Colorado last year, they didn't really like to run the ball because they had a fella named Shador Sanders at quarterback and a receiver at Travis Hunter they preferred to go to instead. He was never asked to be a bell cow back. So if Rasul Faison is clear to play, you have a bell cow back. It's a more complete offense. What the running back room looks like without him, it's now you're now in backfield preservation mode, and you have to find somebody that you can trust giving the ball to 10 to 15 times a game or five times more extra than you normally would. I think if Faison isn't cleared, it's going to be a by-committee thing. And the biggest concern there is, as much as I like Attaway and Augustov as rushers, those two are very similar. They're in between the tackles. They rely a lot on breaking tackles, which they can do, but they don't have that high-end speed that Faison has. So it limits the type of run game that you can have if Faison's not cleared to play. The offensive, I don't think it's an effect on like the, you know, the floor of the Carolina offense, because Faison can play and you can still maybe not have a good run game because the questions on offensive line might not be answered the way you want them to. But it changes the way you distribute the amount of carries in your backfield and the type of runners you have in your backfield if Faison's cleared or not.
Elijah Campbell from 107.5 The Game in Columbia, South Carolina, here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. All right, one or two more, and we'll cut you loose to get back to media days. Shane Beamer was here on Monday, and there was a bit of a, we'll say, interesting moment between him and Paul Finebaum on the SEC Network. I'm sure it made its way into your circle where Paul said without saying, you guys can't win the SEC this year, and basically gave Shane the opportunity to say, okay, here's our goal. And I thought Shane was I liked that he was willing to kind of butt heads with Finebaum a little bit in defense of the team, and he said, we have everything on our roster to do what we need to do, which I think is a fine answer, but it came off a little politician in that he didn't say what that is, right?
Like, right.
It's real easy to get up on the stump asking for votes and go, if you vote for me, I'm going to make your life better, and then leave the stage without saying how.
How.
And that works, but I asked our fans here in Greenville and Spartanburg, and I'll ask you to fill in the blank. When Shane says we have everything on our roster to do what we want to do, what we want to do is what?
Make the college football playoff. They were so close last year.
Sure.
They were so close. I think the reason they weren't in the playoff last year wasn't the amount of games they lost. I think that's the biggest misconception, is that the strength of schedule wasn't taken into account. It was taken into account because you were right on the doorstep at 9-3. Miami went 10-2 and was an afterthought. BYU, 10-2, afterthought.
Sure.
Why are they afterthoughts and you're not? Is because you played a significantly harder schedule. But the fact of the matter is, you lost to the two teams that were ahead of you in the college football playoff rankings going into the last week. If both those teams win in their rivalry game, which Ole Miss and Alabama did, they're not going to leapfrog you. They're not going to punish schools like Alabama and Ole Miss for winning. And I think that's been a pretty consistent thing for the committee since its inception, right, is that they will not punish teams for winning. You're punished if you lose. So it's the fact that you lost to the two teams that are ahead of you. They basically looked at that grouping of the 3-9-3 SEC teams as a three-way tie, and you're not winning the three-way tie if you lost head-to-head in both of those, even though you have better, more explainable losses than Alabama and Ole Miss. But that's how close they were, right? If you just lose a different combination of three games but still beat Clemson on the road and still beat Texas A&M when they were a top 10 team and still have the wins that you do, it's a different story. And I think they're very aware of how close they were. And when Shane Beamer talks about where we want to be, it's the college football playoff, because now it's a reality for teams like South Carolina. Look, I think we're all pretty self-aware here in this great state that South Carolina's played in one SEC championship game ever since joining the league in 1992. Just one. The league is incredibly difficult. And now whenever you're able to expand the playoff and allow more access, that opens the door for schools that are kind of in the middle class of their leagues to be able to gain access to something they've never had access to. So when he says that, the only thing that comes to my mind is the college football playoff.
All right, last one, and we will cut you loose. There has been a conversation ongoing. Shane Beamer has been, to me, a fantastic culture builder in Columbia. Mm-hmm. From the moment he showed up, and I think I, just like everybody else, I think had questions about the hire. Mm-hmm. All right, is this a nepotism hire? He's never been a head coach, yada, yada, yada. All fair questions at the time,
certainly.
I thought. You started hanging the welcome home banners. You started putting up the pictures, and it just felt like the groundswell of support from South Carolina fans has been incalculably valuable to them ever since that moment. But I've also said a few times, at some point, and last year I think was a trend in this direction, at some point all that culture and excitement, it's got to start equaling wins. And it's got to start not just equaling wins, but it's got to start equaling success, trophies, championship appearances, playoff appearances. What is the importance for Shane Beamer to accomplish that this year? And if this team does fall below the mark, 7-5, 6-6, 8-4, I think is even probably below where they want to be, what's next for South Carolina?
Yeah, if they fall below that, let's say they don't, in this hypothetical, let's say they don't make the college football playoff and it's an 8-4. It's a good season, but not a great one. I think it still looks pretty good for him because I think we've seen the proof of concept, right? I don't think there's going to be people really out for blood or fans that are maybe more mad at him. And I know there's probably more context needed because it might depend how you lose
games.
That's
what I've been saying all week.
It can depend how you lose games if you, you know, go full Les Miles on your timeouts and mismanage them or anything like that, make a bad decision.
Mario Cristobal and run instead of kneel.
Lord, yes.
I'm still mad about it, and I hate Miami.
Yeah, like that's one of those things that if something like that kept you out of the college football playoff, then that sting will linger a little bit. But I think the only way that the momentum kind of dies is if you go 5-7. If you have a year like 2023 where it's the absolute worst-case scenario, then that momentum might die a little bit. But the thing about Shane that I really appreciate from him is his ability to sell the program and his ability to make you believe in something you didn't think you would believe in. And I think that's what last year proved. I didn't believe in last year's team. I was sitting here at SEC Media Days in Dallas last season. I think I voted them 12th.
Yeah.
And I was like, if they make a bowl game, good. That's a building block for the future. 9-3 in the regular season wasn't something I thought was remotely close to possible. So I think just given that proof of concept right there would give fans a little hope, even if it is a little more of a disappointing season, like a 7-5, 8-4 maybe, then I think that he's bought enough good grace to where I don't think there is a ton of pressure from the school's administration or the fan base to make any type of change.
I like it. Elijah Campbell from 107.5 The Game in Columbia. My man, great to meet you. It's been a pleasure to share
that
waves. I got to get you on the show in Greenville a few more times if you're good with it.
Anytime, man.
Let's do it.
Anytime.
Let's do it.
Happy
Elijah
to do
Campbell
it.
From 107.5 The Game. We are back after this on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show, back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo. Thanks again to Elijah Campbell from 107.5 The Game in Columbia for joining us in that last segment. Tremendous conversation. I thought it was great. I think he added a lot of insight. One of the things that I very much appreciate is when you start diving into not just the success or failures of offensive and defensive strategies and tactics and coaches and all that, but when you can start breaking down player by player what will be impactful, and Elijah knows that roster as well as anybody else that we've had the chance to get to. So I very much appreciate his time. Talked with him during that break a minute ago. Elijah's going to be joining us in and out the football season as we get a little bit closer because, again, August 31st is – the start of football. I mean, football season started on Monday, but it's like we're playing football, boys. Football that counts, football that's meaningful, football that goes on the record. Since I asked him, and I have gotten a few more texts on the Hub City Spartanburger text line at 844-326-3663, I have asked Gamecock fans. Shane Beamer said, we have everything we need on this roster to accomplish everything we want to accomplish. But he didn't say what that was. He didn't say what the goal was. And this is not a slight to Shane. I understand it. There's a certain way that you have to speak and address the media. This is why coach cliches are coach cliches. Sports speak is sports speak. I get it. But I do want it set. I think it's better for all of us to know kind of what's that baseline. So I've asked South Carolina fans on Twitter, on Twitch, on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok, etc., to give me what are you expecting? What should Shane Beamer have set as the goal? If you were in his shoes and you had to set a goal, what would it be? I've read you a handful of tweets, texts, DMs, comments that we have gotten and responded to them. Lonzo and I going to do the same here. I will start on our live stream, which you can join at facebook.com/thefanupstate or by searching and subscribing to The Fan Upstate on YouTube or searching and following The Rob Brown Show, The Fan Upstate on Twitter. You can do the same with The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, or on Twitch. We go live all 4 hours of every single show. You get to come behind the scenes, have conversations with Lonzo and I off the air that sometimes make it on, sometimes don't. Nettie Mack has joined the Facebook stream. She says, Gamecock girl here, and I am honestly just expecting us to be in the conversation, and I would love for us to play spoiler to the big boys. I would say in response to that, to Nettie Mack's comment here, Lonzo, I think it's fair. I have landed a couple of times on, making an SEC title game appearance, even if you backdoor your way in because you get some help and some other teams lose, great. That is a huge accomplishment. It would be, as Elijah pointed out, the second time in program history you've made it. That would be a big accomplishment. I think getting into the playoffs is probably a roof goal. Like, it's a real possibility, but as I've also said a number of times, I think we would have to evaluate the context of missing out. And Elijah said the same thing. If you lose only to top 10 teams and they are all competitive one-score games, then I think you can go, okay, now we're at the level that we're in these games, we're competing in these games, now the next step is to start winning some of them. But if you miss the playoffs and you're 9-3 and you get blown out by Texas A&M, a team that you are good enough to beat, then we're maybe having a different conversation. But I would be willing to agree with Nenny Matt, great one, that if it's late November and we're making our way to rivalry week and South Carolina is in the discussion, and I'm not talking about to have an impact on teams that are trying to get in. I am saying if we are discussing on November 20th, on November 15th, November 10th, here are the different scenarios for the last 2-3 weeks of the season, that if South Carolina wants in, they've got to win out, or they've got to win out and this team's got to lose, or they've got to win out and these two teams have to lose. If we're even having that conversation and it's realistic and not South Carolina's in if Georgia, Bama, Tennessee, Texas, LSU, and A&M all lose this week, if it's realistic that we are talking scenarios that they need to happen to get in, I'd say that's a solid goal to set.
You know, I've been covering the Gamecocks for 28 years in the upstate. And there was a time early on in Spurrier where the conversation was the Gamecocks are there. The Gamecocks are right where they need to be. They got a shot to win the SEC. And that was a good feeling. And you wanted to believe, hey, this is how it's going to be going forward. And then it faded near the end of Spurrier, and it's never really been back until now. And in order for this to be not just a feeling, but a sense of normalcy, you've got to take that next step, and it has to happen this year. Don't want that just that good feeling of last year and another good feeling this year. You want that to be in the conversation every single year and not take big-time steps back.
I completely agree. Let's keep rolling with some of your responses. Again, the Hub City Spartanburger text line is 844-326-3663. Shoot us a text. We'll read them on the air. You can also get me at on Twitter, on my Facebook page, at The Rob Brown Show, on the station, at Facebook page, at The Fan Upstate, and across all the social medias, at The Rob Brown Show. Here's some more responses we've gotten so far. RJ has written in. He said, Rob, I've been a Gamecock fan since birth, and I'm telling you, 2025 has to be the year we hit double-digit wins. The schedule lines up. Beamer's got his guys 10-2, or we underachieved. Melissa has reached out to the show, said, I'm not expecting miracles. I am expecting consistency. Give me 9-3. Don't get embarrassed on national TV and show up every week like we belong. That's all I want. I will say this, and I don't know that we'll be able to measure this, great one. I don't know that we'll be able to plant a flag and go, this is that moment. But I do think that the mark of success will be the attitude of fans switching to we belong here. Not we're on our way, not we can get there, not we're real close, not the foundation's down and now we got to execute. When the attitude shifts to we're supposed to be here, we're supposed to be in games with Georgia and Alabama and LSU and Texas A&M, we're supposed to be winning these games, that will be the moment that I think we say we've made it, it's successful. The problem is, doing that is tough to do, A, and B, I don't know if we can have a moment that we go, we did it. This is where the fan attitude is now.
Well, yeah, there is one if they're in the playoff.
That's fair. Tank wrote the show. Tank said, bro, I'm tired of building. We've been building since I was a kid. It's time to cash in. I want Atlanta. I want war on the SEC. Love that. Jay has texted the show, said, I'll be thrilled with 8-4 if we're in every game till the end. I'm tired of going up 14 and blowing it late. Let's finish strong and keep stacking dubs. Marcus texted the show, said, Rob, all I want is for us to control the line of scrimmage again. If we do that, we're a 9-1 team, easy. But if we get bullied up front, it's 7-5 for us. Daryl said, not going to lie, man, I think this is the year we get it done. Call me crazy. I think 11-1 is on the table if we stay healthy. That if we stay healthy is doing a lot of weight. Elijah said it. My buddy Brian said it a minute ago. That if we stay healthy could be the difference between a playoff run and 8-4, 7-5, 6-3, and us going, what next? All right, we got to take a break. We have already had Kalen DeBoer speaking on behalf of the Crimson Tide down here below me. We're going to check in on all the sound we picked up for Media Day yesterday. That's coming up next to wrap up a special edition of the Rob Brown Show live from SEC Media Days at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia. This is the Fan Upstate. Wrapping it up, final segment of the final hour of the Rob Brown Show, live from the College Football Hall of Fame in downtown Atlanta, Georgia. It has been a spectacular 2 days so far. Day number three underway. Today's teams include the Alabama Crimson Tide. We saw Kalen DeBoer down at the podium to my right just a couple of minutes ago. The Alabama Crimson Tide players and coaches doing their media car wash right now. Shortly after that, Mississippi State will take to the stage. Then the afternoon session will include the Florida Gators and the Oklahoma Boomer Sooners. Brent Venables will be making his way. You know, we've been talking about, and since this is kind of a crossover spot for the teams that we cover here, great one. You know, we've been talking this week about teams that I believe have coaches that are either on the hot seat or could end up on the hot seat at some point. And we have mentioned Brian Kelly at LSU, which I think is very fair. We have mentioned Hugh Freeze at Auburn, which I think is very fair. We have mentioned Sam Pittman at Arkansas. I'm interested to see, to get his thoughts tomorrow about whether or not they think Sam Pittman can end up on the hot seat. I think Arkansas could win three games this year. Brent Venables is an interesting name there because they paid him a buttload of money to leave Clemson and make his way over to Oklahoma. And Oklahoma fans do not feel like they have gotten the results that they have paid for so far this year. And I think it's fair to talk about that. But I also got, during the break, the link sent to me to vote on the All-SEC teams this year and to vote on our predicted order finish. And I will fill that out between tonight and tomorrow. But I was looking at and thinking about this quite a bit. Like, when I look at, because the first position, and I'm coming back to Brent Venables, stick with me. I'm doing the weave. All right, I'm doing the weave. Stick with me. Brent Venables not given the results to Oklahoma that they wanted, but we also knew it was going to be a process. After the chaos of how everything ended there when Lincoln Riley left to go out to California and coach the USC Trojans, it was inevitably going to be a turnover. And we also know that Brent Venables is, I think fair to say, one of the most unique coaches in all of college football. And so, therefore, shifting the culture, as we've talked about with Shane Beamer, Mike Elko at A&M, was going to take some time. In the quarterback vote, when asked to name the quarterbacks I think should be on the all-SEC team, listed at Oklahoma this year is John Mateer. Mateer is, as Joey B. said in the comments on our live stream earlier today, John Mateer is an unproven commodity. We don't know really what he's going to get. What we do know is that he ran Jackson Arnold out of town, much like happened to Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma that led to him being a South Carolina Gamecock. John Mateer won the starting job out over Jackson Arnold and ended up being the reason that Jackson Arnold transferred to Auburn and will be playing for Hugh Freeze this year. Is it fair to say that Brent Venables is on the hot seat because he does have a quarterback? Again, unproven commodity, but everybody here seems to be very high on John Mateer to be maybe the best quarterback nobody's talking about in this conference. Is it fair to say that, A, he is on the hot seat this year, and that, B, anything less than Oklahoma beating or at least being competitive with Texas and winning, I would say probably 8 games, could have Brent Venables out of a job in Norman? I don't think that's an unfair thing to discuss.
Are you shocked that he's still there? Because he had a rocky start and didn't think he would make it as long as he has. And the fact that he's not mentioned being on the hot seat every single year is a little surprising.
I think Oklahoma, more so than Alabama, I think Oklahoma fans, and this isn't a shot at Bama fans, but also, yes, it is. I think that Oklahoma fans understood when Lincoln Riley left to go to USC that because of who Lincoln Riley was as kind of a player's coach, and I'm not saying Brent Venables isn't, but we all watch Brent Venables at Clemson. We know the absolute, you know, crank to 11 intensity that Brent Venables has. I think they knew it was going to be a culture shift, and I think they knew it was going to take a little time to find that culture shift, and I think they've been willing to give him that time. But much as we've said about Shane Beamer, at some point the culture shift has to start translating to wins, and it just hasn't for OU yet. So I don't know. I kind of feel like we could theoretically say that it's justifiable to put him on the hot seat a little bit too. Let me run this for you. The SEC Network this morning had a bunch of dudes on it. Roma Harper was on there. Laura Rutledge was on it. My dog Benjamin Watson, who we are going to be sitting down with later on this glorious day and interviewing, was on it. They spent a couple of minutes discussing who from the Southeastern Conference has the best chance to win the college football national championship game. And there were a couple of interesting takes and remarks. Oh, this is this to
Do
me
we
is
all agree
stop
that
it. No, Laura, you've had your time. Thank you so much. You're the best. Love you. Okay, bye. I don't know why I did all that. This is what I have seen happening the last couple of days, Lonzo. It feels like nationally, it's almost like nationally. It feels like writers are just penning Texas in. Oh, Arch is going to be a dude. Arch is going to be a guy. He's going to carry him. Texas is almost penciled in, despite the fact that we have pointed out a number of times. They got two real tough national championship possible previews on the schedule, including week one at Ohio State, and then was it week eight against Georgia, and still being penciled in. Here's what I found. The one place where the Texas Longhorns are being questioned the most is here at SEC Media Days, and I'm not talking about dudes like me that are very clearly here to cover one of the SEC teams. I am talking about by Paul Feinbaum, Ben Watson, Roman Harper. I'm talking about the SEC Network folks. I'm talking about some of the nationally syndicated folks that are over on the other side of the building. I have heard them. I heard Josh Pate talking about it a couple of days ago. It feels like 3 weeks ago, it was just, it's Texas and whoever's going to play Arch Manning in the championship game. And here at SEC Media Days, it feels like, and I started it, David Nuno agreed with it, it feels like Arch and the Longhorns are being questioned here more than they are anywhere else in the country. And I don't know that that means anything. I just find it interesting.
Well, it comes down to that they don't really know. I mean, Arch Manning, the name is known, but you still don't know what he's going to do on the field. And there's still always the Spurrier quote, which a lot of people have thought about. Why isn't he starting? So you keep talking. Everyone's talking about Sellers, and if the team will go as he goes. It's the same with Texas. The team will go as Arch Manning goes. If Arch Manning is not that good, Texas is not going to be back in the national championship picture.
That's fair.
If the Ohio State defense gets to him in that very first game, the questions will get even louder, even though who they're playing, it should be a difficult game. But if he goes out there and he kills it, and they beat Ohio State by two touchdowns, then suddenly all that doubt will die down and they'll be back on, yeah, he is the savior of Texas and he's going to win the Heisman.
I don't think any of that's unfair. And I will say, you know, I heard, in fact, I think I said last week, we'll get a real good idea of if he is the guy that everybody expects him to be or not real early. But I would go one step further and say, I'm going to walk that back. Maybe not, because over the past 5, 10 years, I know that we have talked about the Ohio State University being wide receiver you, running back you. You sent what, like two running backs inside the top three rounds of the NFL draft this year.
Well, one of them we don't want to talk about right now.
Yeah, not right now, but you sent him, whether or not he does anything with it. But two running backs, a wide receiver. I mean, Ohio State has been sending skill guys left and right the last couple of years, and what's gotten lost in that proverbial sauce, great one, is that the Buckeyes have also stacked defensive linemen and linebackers the last couple of years, too. Like, the front seven of the Buckeyes has been as consistent as anybody else's in football.
I will say, I could very well see Arch Manning losing that week one contest because the Buckeye front seven is just bloodthirsty, and then having a couple of games for Texas to kind of pick up the pieces, rebuild them, and be ready for Georgia, who will have the same philosophy. I think it is possible that maybe Arch struggles a little out of the gate, and then there's a rebuilding process, because what a hell of a start for his first time at QB1. But I absolutely will not be shocked if Arch Manning ain't there, and that seems to be a prevalent thought here at SEC Media Days.
We shall see. It's very exciting because it's football season. All right, the first thing that is Xing today is Trey Smith.
Trey Smith Xing. I have nothing.
Okay, he just signed the biggest contract in NFL history.
Oh, that's right, highest paid guard. Yeah, highest paid guard in NFL history, $94 million contract extension with those Kansas City Chiefs. Great googly moogly. Look, I think it's a great idea for Kansas City because I know you want to spread the money around, but I think you guys got younger at the skill position, and I think you did that, Zoe, so that you could invest in the offensive line because I don't know if you know this or not. Patrick Mahomes is very fat. He's probably going to be out there on a Rascal scooter this year.
I have heard that. Definitely a Rascal scooter for sure.
Yep.
All right, the next thing that's asking – sorry, now I'm picturing that – is Wyndham Clark.
Wyndham Clark. What did Wyndham Clark say? Because he said something.
No, Wyndham Clark beat up the lockers at Oakmont, and he is now banned from playing at Oakmont.
Wow!
Unless there's an apology, there's some things that
he'll apologize. I'm sorry, I'm shocked if he hasn't done it already. By the way, did you see? And I wanted to get to this on the show, but we are obviously doing college football, so I'll come back to it probably on Friday. Did you see the comments from Scottie Scheffler? Scottie Scheffler, of course, the greatest golfer on planet Earth right now, said yesterday that. Winning doesn't really do it for a thing. He's like, yeah, you feel like satisfaction for 2 or 3 minutes, but then it's like it's over, and it's just kind of on to the next thing. He said, effectively, winning's not really all that important to him. It's more about, like, just being the best golfer he can be. And a lot of people are up in arms because, like, that's not the Mamba mentality or whatever. I'm going to tell you this. You can say Scottie Scheffler's philosophy and approach to golf is wrong when he stops beating everybody's ass all the time. End of take. End of show. That's it for us. We're live at SEC Media Days at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia. Coming up on tomorrow's show, Ben Watson from the SEC Network and 1996 Heisman Trophy winner and national champion Danny Werfel. I will sit down with both this afternoon. We'll have those interviews for you tomorrow. Follow me on social media at The Rob Brown Show and at The Fan Upstate. I'll keep you updated through the rest of the day. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. For Lonzo, I'm Rob. Have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the final day of SEC Media Days at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia. This is The Rob Brown Show, presented today by our friends at Ingles on the Fan Upstate.